Yeah, this is side four, Bernard Halpern interviewed by Eileen Lane. We were discussing the changes
the nature of the hospitals and the health center. There was a specialty hospital such as Eye and Ear. There was a specialty hospital such as Children's. There was a specialty hospital such as McGee. And there was a general acute care hospital such as Presby. Montefiore, like Presby, is a general acute care hospital. And it was natural that there would be some rivalry between Montefiore and Presby. And that rivalry was intensified by the fact that traditionally the chiefs of service at Presby, the main services, were the chairman of those departments, the corresponding departments of the medical school. And this has led to some difficulties, and eventually it led to a the university notifying Montefiore that it was giving it 1 year's notice of termination of the contract, but within that 1 year, a new contract was entered into, describing a somewhat different relationship, and I think a more successful one. I was involved on both sides of that question because about 10 years or so ago, maybe 9 years ago, I became a trustee of the University of Pittsburgh. And I was a member of its Committee of the Health Sciences. And in the days of difficult discussions and negotiations between the medical school and Montefiore, I was involved up to my eyebrows on both sides.
But these problems have been resolved to Montefiore?
For the most part, they've been resolved, yeah.
What about
not completely.
What about Montefiore's relationship to the Federation? Has that changed over this period of time?
No. During all this period of time, and I would say this goes back at least 20 years, there have been voices within the Federation which have insisted that Montefiore did indeed the Federation subsidy, that the Federation subsidy to Montefiore represented only a drop in the bucket of Montefiore's budget, that with the imperative needs for Jewish education, that the money given to Montefiore would be better spent on local Jewish educational institutions. Conversely, there have always been those who have said that Montefiore serves a very effective role for the Jewish community in providing a service to the general community, and that service to the general community is recognized by the general community, and particularly by the corporate and foundation leadership of the Pittsburgh community. I think that's true. And I think that some of the reasons why Jewish institutions, which are supported by the United Way, that doesn't include Montefiore, but it includes the Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged, the Jewish Family and Children's Center, and the Jewish Community Center, have generally fared very well in United Way campaigns, is because the leadership of the United Way recognizes the Jewish community's contribution to the general community through Montefiore Hospital. Those voices on both sides of that question are still being heard today. There are those, I heard just a few days ago somebody was saying, as a matter of fact, I heard it was discussed at a recent, a current young leadership course of Federation, that the money given to Montefiore Hospital is probably wasted and should go to Jewish education.
What about the constitution of the board of Montefiore? I've often heard it said that this was the most prestigious Jewish board in the city. Why do you think, is that true? Why do you think that's true? Is that still true?
I think it's a good board. I think it's an active board.
More active now than when you initially were involved?
Yes, I think that I helped set a pattern for involving the board more actively in the concerns of Montefiore Hospital. I know that one of the things that I did, at the time I became president, there was a big controversy. Montefiore was not yet affiliated with the university, but there was a big controversy that had been engendered by some members of Montefiore's medical staff who felt that the whatever relationship we had with the university was wrong and that it was going to lead to university's domination of Montefiore Hospital and that Montefiore should retreat rather than go forward with any affiliation with the university. This was before it had affiliated in 1969. This had led to such disaffection on the part of some of the members of the medical staff that they had entered a suit against the hospital to prevent it from doing the kind of things that are probably inherent in being a teaching hospital and training young doctors, or at least with the then current practices that are inherent in such a system, which means a greater involvement of house officers in the care of patients and so forth, although under the supervision of the attending physicians and the full-time physicians. But one of the first things that I did when I was president was have an all-day briefing session of the board in which we brought in some outside experts to explain to the board something that which they probably had never really been educated to, which was the role of a teaching hospital, the advantages of a teaching hospital, the costs of a teaching hospital, and I was always convinced that if we really wanted to pursue to its highest degree excellence in healthcare, we had to be a teaching hospital. And this all-day session, for example, I think opened the eyes of many members of the board who really didn't understand the issues that were involved in these questions.
Does the Federation have appointees on the board of Montefiore Hospital?
No.
And has the composition of the board changed significantly?
Not significantly. It's just the people of the community have changed, and then the board can, I guess in a way the board of the hospital is a little more open than it used to be. There have been a couple of changes. There have at times been blacks on the board of Montefiore, although there are none there at present time. There are one or two non-Jews serving on the board of Montefiore. I don't regard these changes as really significant, and I don't think that they greatly influence the policy direction of the hospital.
What about women?
There had always been women on the board. There may be a few more now than there were before, but I don't think that that's really a significant change. In a way, the board is a more open board. Now, your question as to whether it's a prestigious board, I wouldn't classify it as a prestigious, as being any more prestigious than most other boards.
You were involved very early on in concerns about the aged and the well-aged and housing for the aged. Yeah, and this has continued, your interest?
It's continued with interruption. I got away from it, really, during the period that I was president of the hospital. But it's returned because I'm now chairman of the Council on the Elderly.
And what do you see as differences between the attitude in 1960 when you first went to the White House conference and attitudes now?
I really see no difference in attitude. I think that Jews have always been concerned about the care of their elderly. I think we had just as much concern in 1960 as we did in 1982.
What about
now? The techniques may have changed. The mechanisms that are available for that care have changed,
Do you think Jews were very much in the forefront of providing certain types of care and services to the elderly?
I don't know whether we were in the forefront or not. I think that we, in relation to the size of our community, we probably have devoted a greater amount of our available resources to the care of the elderly than other communities have done. I think that the Jews tend to be one, idealistic, two, intellectual. Therefore, we may, to some extent, have reached out earlier for new ideas and sought to put them into practice. But I can't claim any significant.
Well, wasn't the Riverview concept quite new and novel when it was first built?
Probably was, yes. We weren't the first to do it in Pittsburgh, but there probably had not been any discrete community group which had created a so-called apartment for well agent. That may be so. We may have been the first in Pittsburgh of any of the various sub-communities of the total community.
What about some of your other communal involvements outside the Jewish community? You mentioned that you've been a trustee of the hospital, of the university. Do you feel this has been significant for you as a Jew? To what do you attribute the fact that you sit on that board?
I attribute that entirely to the fact that Leon Falk liked my bringing the hospital into the university family, because it was a short time after that that he asked me to have lunch with him and Bill Ray, who was chairman of the board of trustees of the university. And we talked about a number of things and my interest in healthcare delivery and the like, and my career. And after that, I was invited to go on the board of Pitt. So I think that came out of my involvement with the hospital.
You've also been involved, haven't you, with the Israel Heritage Room, the university?
Yeah, that goes back to the middle 60s. That's a long history. Someday the history of that room will be written. I don't think we should go into this. You want to go into it?
Well, just briefly, this has been something that's been around for a while.
It's been around for at least 15 years.
Well, how did you get your initial involvement in that?
I don't know. I was asked to serve on a committee at the beginning. It was chaired by Charlie Rosenblum. Lillian Friedberg was on it. She was then the director of the Jewish Community Relations Council, which is the forerunner of what is now the Community Relations Committee of the Federation. Herman Feinberg was on it. Landis was on it.
Was this come out of the Federation or just?
No, it really didn't come out of the Federation. It was a separate enterprise, and it involved in the beginning perhaps a dozen of us. And we determined that there should be an Israel Room, although it took us a while to determine that. And then we went through a period of deciding how to create an Israel Room, and one of the things that we did was that from among the committee we raised a small fund. I think it was $3,000-$4,000, and we held a design contest among Israeli artists for the design of an Israel Room. And I remember at the time objecting to the way we were proceeding, because we as a committee had not made a statement of what we wanted the room to say. But we were leaving it entirely up to the Israeli artists to determine what it should say. And the design, which was judged to be the winner of the competition, in my opinion, didn't say the right thing, because it used largely abstract artistic models to evoke the idea of the modern state of Israel. And I felt that the Israel Room at the Cathedral of Learning, consistent with the standing rules for those rooms, were to hark back to the artistic forms of the nation of our heritage that antedated the American Revolution. And I thought that in an Israel room, we had an opportunity to use artistic forms that were the oldest of any of the nationality rooms, because the ones that are there now go back at the most 5 centuries. And although I guess in the Greek room there are some implied references to 2,000 years ago, and perhaps so even in the Chinese room. But the English room is only represents things which are 400 or 500 years old. And some of the other rooms are even more recent in their artistic expression. Well, that original design was never executed because when we achieved it, it was just before 1973 and the war and the critical needs of Israel for even more money from the Jewish community. And it was determined that to execute that design would cost $500,000, that was considered out of our reach, so that plan was shelved. And in the next several years, although the committee didn't function actively, I was instrumental in creating a small group of academics, which included Jerry Rosenberg, the dean of the Faculty of Arts and Sciences at Pitt, and Frank Toker, who was then at Carnegie Mellon University, and Joe Eaton, and Sam Dadashevsky, and Mark Perlman, and a few others, all of whom I felt were knowledgeable in Jewish understanding. And we had several meetings and tried to wrestle and come up with a theme for an Israel meeting. And eventually we did. And Jerry Rosenberg wrote a paper which summarized our thinking. And that thinking was that we, the people of the book, in creating a room which was to be used as a study room in the Cathedral of Learning of the University of Pittsburgh, should hark back to an ancient Israeli study room, which would also, in its time, double as a synagogue. The two were the same. And that it was singularly appropriate that these be combined for this function. And so we've come up with the theme was the work of the committee. The design was the work of Frank Toker, who was a member of the committee.
Do you think it's significant that other nationalities in the city that no longer had even countries at the time in which their rooms were created so much before this Israel Heritage Room?
Which rooms no longer had countries?
Was there Lithuania when the Lithuanian room was?
I think there was.
I mean, my question really stems from why has it taken so long for there to be an Israel Heritage Room, and what does that say?
Well,
does that say anything?
As I understand it, Lillian Friedberg was approached by somebody from the university in the middle 60s with the idea that maybe it would be appropriate that there be an Israel Room. Now, I know that the idea had been broached in the early 30s, and it was felt that because there was no nation, there should be no room. And I think that that may have been the feeling both from within the university and from within the Jewish community. And I remember seeing a letter. Apparently the National Council of Jewish Women at that time were active in considering this matter.
This is in the 30s.
They solicited opinions from leaders worldwide. And I remember seeing a handwritten letter which was addressed to the National Council of Jewish Women or somebody within it by Albert Einstein dealing with the question of whether or not there should be an Israel room or a Palestine room or a Jewish room. I guess it was called a Jewish room at that time, not an Israel room. And Leona Davis had that letter. She had it framed, hanging at her apartment. I remember seeing it. I think it concluded that it probably was inappropriate that there be such a rule.
But you
of course, the university never had any interest in having a religious rule. There was always this question of what were the Jews? And there was no nation, so what were the Jews? Were they a nation or were they a religion? The university would have been embarrassed if there had been a Jewish rule. I'm sure of that. It just didn't fit into the concept of the nationality rooms. They were always nationality rooms.
Okay. Are there any other community activities you've become involved in that we haven't touched upon?
Yes.
Okay.
I served on the Scouting Review Committee and later was chairman of it, of the United Way, and on the Planning and Allocations Committee of the United Way. I would say that involvement extended over a period of 6 or 7 years.
During which?
Generally from 1970 to 76 or so.
Was that important to you, and did you feel that your service was significant? Or did you achieve anything significant?
No, I did have a... I think that I was a representative of the Jewish community to the general community, and I think it was important that Jews be represented, and not that I was a pioneer or the only Jew that was involved, but I think that there... It was important that there be a significant number of us, and there were. I would say I was one of that number. I enjoyed the experience. It wasn't nearly as important to me as the presidency of the hospital, or my involvement with the hospital, or my involvement with the university. I was also on the board of the Chronicle for about 6 years, the last three of which I was president of the Chronicle.
And what changes or what did you institute or what?
I didn't institute any significant changes in the editorial policy, maybe a little bit more openness. I think I accomplished some significant changes in the financial structure of the Chronicle. The Chronicle had started under a financial handicap with no money, and it was struggling financially, trying to meet its debts, and I didn't pay off its debts, but I refinanced its debts, largely with the help of the Federation. I was able to persuade the Federation that it had an obligation to the Chronicle financially, which it had never fully met, and I was able to get larger amount of payment from the Federation to the Chronicle for the so-called free subscriptions which the Chronicle provides to the contributors to the Federation.
What years were these? When did you serve?
Well, I guess 1975 to 78, something like that.
Do you feel that the Chronicle is an independent enough newspaper or too closely? Is it representative enough of the Jewish community?
I think it is, yes. I think it's representative enough of the Jewish community. It is, let's say, it's affiliated with the Federation. It was created by the Federation. I think that its editorial policy is determined by itself, from within itself, let's say from its board and from its editor. I think that the Federation, being an overall community organization and a key community organization, has a proper interest in seeing that its viewpoints are made known to the Chronicle, but it doesn't do that directly, it does that indirectly. In one way or another, most of the leadership of the Jewish community and the agencies of the Jewish community have Federation connection.
What about synagogues?
Well, that connection is being furthered now too, but I'm talking about the most of the charitable agencies. And certainly the large fundraising drives and so forth involve the Federation. And people who become, and the Federation probably involves more people in its leadership and its campaigning than any other organization. And it's natural that people who are involved with the Federation also have an interest in other organizations. And I think it strengthens both of the other organizations and the Federation. And certainly, as if I were to sit on the board of the Chronicle or to be its president, I would not be unmindful of the regard that I have for the Federation. And I therefore would attempt to influence the Chronicle in ways that I regard as constructive for the Jewish community, which includes the Federation. Now, that is not to say that the Chronicle can't deal effectively with matters in which it might be critical of the Federation, because in the long run, the interests of the Jewish community require the most effective Federation possible. And the Federation is a human organization, and if it falls into error, and it does sometimes, then it should be criticized. It should be criticized from within its own ranks, and it should be criticized from without. And it has been. And the Chronicle at times has done that. I think that there have been some times, this goes back a long, long time ago, when the Chronicle might have soft-pedaled some criticism, some legitimate criticism of minor actions of Federation. But I don't think there have been any fundamental errors of the Federation which have not been self-corrected, which require obstreperous criticism in the pages of the Chronicle. After all, the most important thing I think that all of us have to be committed to is recognizing the needs that must be met and raising the funds to meet them. We all know how difficult it is to raise those funds and how there are plenty of people who are prone to criticize this, that, or the other minor peccadillo of the Federation or any of its agencies and regard that as an excuse for non-giving. And I don't think that the Chronicle should add fuel to those unnecessary flames.
But what of its role as a newspaper?
It has, I think, a newspaper has a responsibility to exercise its role responsibly. And I think that the Chronicle has properly aired all the issues that should be aired.
But isn't...
And I don't think it's necessary for the Chronicle to take an editorial stand one way or another against certain things. There have been controversial decisions within the Federation. There have been discussions at board levels on which there are divided votes. There have been discussions within certain committees of the Federation in which there have been divided votes. I don't think that it's the responsibility of the Chronicle to take one side or another of those issues. I think the Federation has within itself the means to achieve a proper consensus, if necessary, to achieve compromises, because certainly the viewpoint of the Jewish community is never monolithic. There will always be differences of opinion. And I think it would be presumptuous of the Chronicle to take a stand on one side or another of an issue which is controversial within the Federation itself. Now, I think that the Chronicle has aired the fact that there are controversial issues which the Federation has dealt with. But it has never, I think it's proper for it to abstain from saying which side of these controversies is the right side. Because both sides may have considerable merit, and both sides may have considerable partisan support. So why should the Chronicle, what makes the Chronicle better able to decide this? After all, the Chronicle board is relatively small.
And how is it constituted and who appoints it?
The nominating committee is appointed jointly by the president of the Chronicle and the president of the Federation. And I think at the beginning, don't forget, there was whatever funding the Chronicle had came from the Federation. And I think that it was required at the beginning that half the board of the Chronicle be representatives of the Federation. I'm not sure that that requirement still obtains. It didn't make any difference. I do know this. When I was president, there was some discussion at a board meeting by somebody who was not a Federation representative that he thought that the Federation unduly dominated the Chronicle. And I pointed out to him that at the time, the membership of the Chronicle board did not include the full quota often stated by the bylaws to be Federation representatives. But on the other hand, there is no question that people who were not directly Federation representatives had been workers for the Federation, supporters of the Federation, and probably still had a Federation set of mind. How are you going to determine these things? You have to be on the Federation board to be a Federation representative.